You're listening to Food Confidence, a podcast about approachable health and imperfect food, all for the sake of the next generation. I'm Jennifer Bravo.
And I'm Andrea Paul. We are two non-diet health professionals on a mission to empower parents and caregivers in raising food and body confident kids. You're listening to episode 3 of the Food Confidence Podcast. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Jennifer. On today's show, we have Dana Succo, an award-winning speaker and educator with an eye towards eating disorder prevention. She gives parents, teachers, and caregivers the tools they need to raise body-confident kids.
In our conversation with Dana, we talk about all the ways that diet culture shows up in the lives of our kids. And she gives parents and caregivers some great tools and actionable steps to take to help foster a healthy relationship with food and body.
So without further ado, here's our conversation with Dana. Dana, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk with you guys today.
Yeah, thanks for being, you're actually our first podcast guest on the Food Confidence Podcast. So
Yay!
It's kind of big for us. And we're especially happy to have you because you are a professional public speaker. So us being, you know, two very newbies, you know, no pressure or anything. But
I was just about to say, no pressure.
Yeah, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. No, I'm excited. And again, I mean, it's always fun to just have conversations about this stuff. I think having, you know, we're all coming from a place where we really just, we want to help people. We want people to love their bodies. We want to prevent eating disorders. So I just think coming from that place, like the conversation will be great.
Absolutely. So, you know, on that note, can you tell our guests a little bit more about what it is that you do?
Yeah, so I am an eating disorder survivor. I am a speaker and an educator. I work with parents and teachers and caregivers to help prevent eating disorders, to help them raise kids who love their bodies. You know, I've done a lot of work around body image and body positivity over the last couple years, and I really was thinking, as I was getting through my recovery, I was thinking a lot about where can I really enact change? Where can I really help people? And I was like, you know, I love protecting children. That's such a passion of mine, but there's already a lot of groups that are working with kids and are working to protect children and teach children media literacy and teach children about bullying and social media. There's not a lot of groups that are working with parents. And I think it's, you know, we kind of miss this step that we can empower children all we want. But if a child is going home and they're getting body shamed, or if they're in the school and they're getting their BMI measured and they're being told that they're not good enough, you know, a kid becomes disempowered. And it's like a lot of the tools that they've learned and they've been given go out the window. And so I think it needs to really be this holistic thing where we look at, we've got to have people helping kids directly. And then we've got to have people that are giving tools to the adults that are raising children to how they can do it more effectively and how they can do it where a child is truly feels seen and loved and heard and safe. Mm. So that was long, but that's kind of the core of the work that I do. And so I speak at events, I do panels, but then I also do one-on-one training with parents and teachers, and I help them, you know, work through this stuff. And I make sure that they walk away with actionable tools that they can use that day. And I love doing it. It is such a passion of mine.
Well, we are so lucky as a community to have you, because that is really such important work. And I know as a parent, I can say, you know, that people like you are what help us feel empowered to make a difference with our children. And that's where it starts. So thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course. I think I can probably speak for Jen and I that, you know, we're very much on the same page. You know, this is kind of why we started the podcast in the first place, is because we feel like parents and caregivers do need some more information and some, you know, ways to truly feel empowered. And because it is a confusing world out there. And, you know, I've heard from several moms, myself not being a parent myself, but I've heard from several other parents that, you know, it's hard to be a parent these days and to know what to do. And, you know,
how to do the right thing. Yeah, I mean, it's completely, it's so difficult. I can't imagine being a parent these days. You know, you've got every magazine is telling you to do something different. Every diet is telling you to feed your child something different. Every doctor is weighing your child's weight and your weight. And it's, you know, parents are being held up to this standard that they, you know, their children have to look perfect to prove that they're perfect parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're not allowing parents to say that they're not imperfect. We're not giving them places that they can mess up. We're not giving them, you know, there's not a lot of places where parents feel like they can go without being yelled at or shamed. And, you know, I, again, like over the years, I've learned that like shame doesn't work. Shaming people into change doesn't really work. And I that's why I love Brené Brown so much, but it's all about, sorry.
When you said, you know, when you started talking about shame, I was like, oh, that reminds me of a Brené Brown quote. And then you said it.
Yeah. It's, but I mean, that's why I love her work so much, because it's, you know, we've got to meet people where we're at. And so many people don't know about diet culture, and they're not going to want to learn about it if they're getting yelled at.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that note, what can you tell us a little bit about diet culture and how you see it's affecting our children?
Big question.
It's a good question. I mean, I think we need to look at what is diet culture in the first place, in case there's anybody listening who doesn't know. And diet culture is a system that demonizes fat. It marginalizes plus bodies. And it says that the only way that you are valued and loved in this society is if you are thin, or if you are actively on a weight loss journey or losing weight. And it is that, you know, we look at this like grand theme of diet culture, and it truly is a culture. It is a systemic problem. And we think it's only affecting adults, but it's not. It is trickling down to children. And, you know, we now have children as young as 5 years old saying that they would rather lose a parent than get fat. So it is a very serious issue. And it is something that has got to be addressed, because what's happening is we are having young children growing up afraid of being plus size, afraid of being different, afraid of not looking perfect. And all of their energy is being put into their exterior instead of their interior. And we have kids that are more focused on makeup than in school. We have kids that are more focused on, you know, how they look than being good and kind and loving people. And we're doing a disservice to children by saying that this is okay. And so, you know, how does it affect them? I mean, eating disorders are on the rise. You know, self-hatred is on the rise. Like I like to say that we are in an epidemic of self-hate. And, you know, maybe it's not coming out in an eating disorder per se, but it's coming out in somebody wanting to change their body, wanting to change their looks, you know, depression, binge eating, or, you know, binge drinking, drugs. Like, there's so many outlets now that this self-hate is coming out in, and it's affecting younger and younger people.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I recently read a statistic that said a child is 242 times more likely to develop an eating disorder than they are type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, I think that came out from one of the major eating disorder organizations, mm-hmm. right? But that's not what we hear in mainstream media. I mean, you know, especially I'm a registered dietitian, and, you know, a lot of the focus of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics is on quote unquote obesity. And a lot of the information that is shared is, you know, I think there was things shared a while ago from the Academy that, you know, how to attach trackers to kids, and it's not all bad, but it's, you know, it's coming from these very major,
right. It's trickling down
major, you know, authoritative kind of organizations. Yeah. And I think that's a huge, huge issue in my eyes.
And I think diet culture has this way. And you know, Andrea, coming from her training as a registered dietitian, like, we see the health advice hit mainstream media, get interpreted, get misinterpreted. But then, you know, it's there on one end of the spectrum. And then on the other end of the spectrum is just like you said, Dana, where, you know, it materializes as self-hate, because we're we're comparing ourselves to these statistics and these numbers, and we're fearful, we're scared. And what do? We press in. And that happens to us as adults, let alone children who are such black and white thinkers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's that, yeah, that statistic, I wrote it down. It was that kids are 242 times more likely to develop an eating disorder than type 2 diabetes. And again, like what you're saying is we don't hear that information. We don't hear that. And the reason we don't hear it is because eating disorder behavior has become normalized. Mm-hmm. You know, that is now normal. Everyone has some type of disordered relationship with food. And it's almost weird when you meet someone and they don't have guilt or shame around eating a cookie. And I think we have got to raise, you know, I think we have in society, we have such an idea of what an eating disorder is. An eating disorder is a thin, white, frail, young teen who's not eating. And a majority of people with eating disorders don't fit that, you know, right. And we have this idea that plus size people can't have eating disorders and that they don't affect more marginalized bodies in different ways. And I think we've got to have more representation of what an eating disorder looks like. And also the idea that this having shame around food and eating food and then feeling bad and guilty, it doesn't feel good. And health is not just appearance. Health is mental. And if you're doing something that doesn't feel good, that's unhealthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we hear it every single day, those just kind of off the cuff, you know, people don't even think about what they're saying, you know, that, oh, I heard yesterday, oh, I ran yesterday, so I don't feel so bad about eating this today.
Right,
and they're inadvertently putting themselves on a diet. And, you know, when kids are exposed to that kind of language, I mean, they don't know how to interpret that.
Of course.
You know, they're not emotionally mature enough to interpret that critically. You know, so those things, you know, have to kind of catch adults sometimes saying that and remind them, like, you know, what would a kid think if they heard you saying that?
That's such a great point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of times we forget just how sponge-like children are. And I remind people this all the time that, you know, kids are, they're not just looking at you and mirroring the things that you do because they love you and they like you. They're doing it for survival. Kids are learning survival skills and how they should live in society through their parents or through their guardians or through their caretakers or through their teachers or any adult that's around them. And so whether we are saying something or not saying something, children are picking up that language. So if we are saying, I have to go to the gym because I ate this cookie, a child is going to internalize that and process it in the way that if I eat a cookie, I have to work out because cookies are bad, therefore I am bad. And I think we say these things so casually because they're so normalized in this world, but we say them so casually that we forget, you know, if you dissect the sentence and if you follow the trail of the sentence, the core of it is that if you eat this cookie, you're not going to be loved. Or if you are plus size, or if you put on weight, you are not going to be loved. And we have got to nip that in the bud. We have got to really be paying closer attention to the things that we're saying, not only to children, not only around children, but also to ourselves. Because the things that we say to ourselves, our children pick up on that energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As Brené Brown says, we can't give our children anything that we don't have. And that is true with food and body confidence.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how much we think we're separating the two, our children are always watching and they are always listening.
Yeah.
I do want to say though, you know, because I do work with people who absolutely don't love their bodies, like don't love their bodies and feel like I'm ruining my child because if I don't love myself, I'm going to ruin my kid. You know, my kids. And I do want to say, yes, I love that Brené quote. Like we can't, it's like, you can't give your children something you don't have. But at the same time, I also believe that there's got to be a thing that goes hand in hand. Like you can fake it. You can fake it until you make it. And I believe in you. I believe that you will be able to fake it. You know, if you could do a job interview that you didn't really want, but you got it anyway, you can fake certain things in life. And I do think that I don't want parents to hear, you know, a quote like, well, if I don't have it, I can't give it, because I think sometimes that can make them feel like, well, I'm screwed. And I think all of us are coming from some form of self-hatred, some form of dislike. And so I want to say to anyone listening that whether you completely despise yourself and you're just beginning on your journey, or whether you are far along in your journey, you can help raise body confident kids. Your kids are not, they're not damned. They are not ruined. They are not on a path to hell or whatever you think they are. And you're doing a good job, but you can always do better.
That's such an important distinction. Thank you for clarifying that for our audience.
Yeah, and it's a great, but it's a great quote. I mean, I really appreciate you bringing it up.
And that's just a proof of where nuance matters. You know, it's how we can address, you know, everything that comes our way, and how we can, you know, internalize it and move on from it, or how we can learn from it, and how we can just use all this information for our benefit. So thank you.
Absolutely.
So if we could for a second go back to what we were talking about, eating disorder awareness and having more representation. I'm sure you saw the National Eating Disorder Awareness, like the Eating Disorder Awareness Week, which the theme was Come As You Are. Were you around for that? I know you were off line for a little bit.
I did not see that. What that was a campaign
that
we're doing?
The campaign. Yeah. So for National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, the theme was Come As You Are. And so there was a very big push around representation and seeing eating disorders in, you know, all kinds of people, all kinds of bodies. Question is kind of, you know, parents of boys. So, you know, sometimes we think, like you were saying before, we see maybe heavily eating disorders heavily represented in the media as like a thin female. And although we know there are the statistics show us that eating disorders are more prevalent in females, you know, they're still very present for boys.
Absolutely.
So, you know, any,
and binge eating disorder is growing severely with men.
Yeah. So can you speak to that? I mean, what would you kind of give, you know, what would you say to kind of parents of maybe who just have boys, or, you know, maybe they're not worried about their sons, but, you know, maybe the partner, the, you know, the male person in that relationship is doing a diet or likes to watch what they eat or whatnot. So what would you say about that, do you think?
Yeah. So I think that there's a couple things. I think there's a couple things we need to address, especially with boys. And so the first one is, you know, you may not think your child is going to be affected by diet culture, but I promise you they will. I promise you, it leaves no stone unturned. Everyone is a victim in some fashion. You know, men different, but men, we have this growing idea. Well, let me backtrack. So we have to kind of look at capitalism and, you know, to kind of paint it with a broad brush, we've got to look at capitalism. And, you know, women have been told for so long that their bodies are wrong. And we've been told, you know, about our legs, our thighs, our stomachs, our face, our skin, our hair, our, you know, our hands, like they're doing, you know, laser resurfacing because hands are getting wrinkly. I mean, every part of our body, there is something to fix it. But the problem is, we only have a finite, you know, number of body parts. You know, we're not growing a third arm. We're not growing four legs. And so, you know, these industries are going, okay, well, we've told women they should wax every ounce of their body hair, and we've capped at our profits. So we've got to move on to men. And so men are starting, it's kind of, you know, how it was years ago with women, is that men are just starting to get these really twisted body ideals and Photoshop and you know, laser hair removal and Botox and fillers, and it's increasing incredibly with men. And so, yes, there is, you know, a different ideal body for women, but it's growing with men, and it's growing because businesses are able to profit off of men's insecurities. And there's so many men that I know that are very insecure about their body. And so men will be affected, and young boys will be affected. And a lot of it has to do with toxic masculinity, you know, with men not being able to be in touch with their emotions, thinking that women are objects to be conquered, thinking that they deserve a woman's body, that they need to be muscular and toned. And there's so many aspects of it. You know, so for parents of just boys, education around diet culture, changing the way we talk about bodies, letting children know that they're going to be loved no matter what their body looks like is universal. And it should be applied to boys also. And, you know, another part of it too is that if you don't think that your child is going to have any body image issues, you still need to teach them to respect other bodies. Mm-hmm. We still need to teach boys that plus size women are okay and that plus size men are okay and accepted and loved, and that all people need to be loved and accepted just as they are, and that we don't have any right to tell people that they can change their bodies. You know, little boys need to see natural bodies. Little boys should see their parents, their mom dancing around and see people on the beach and see people, you know, unafraid to also show their bodies. And I know it's hard, but I think that these are really important things that we can't forget about little boys.
Oh, absolutely. That like pulls at my heartstrings. It's so true. I mean, really, because we think, even though I think we're progressing as a culture and we're stripping back the gender roles and we're really trying to help our children be, you know, who they want to be and play with what they want to play, I think we do forget, like, oh no, well, they need to see body diversity, and that's part of that culture that is stripped away, you know?
Yeah.
So it's imperative to think of it like that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
So I kind of want to take a second to talk about school. I've seen a couple of things floating around. I've had some people message me, online about things that they're seeing slipping into lunchboxes or activities that they're doing at school about demonizing food and, saying, identifying good and bad foods. Like, I think one I just saw was a flyer had come home in a mother's or in a child's lunchbox, and it said, "This is a red food pick. Pick something healthier for so
what?"
Yeah. And the way it read, it sounded maybe British or like a little European. So I don't know exactly where it came from, but it said red food pick, which I'm assuming was
like yellow, red,
yeah,
and something like that. Yeah.
And so they said, pick something healthier for so-and-so, and they named the child. And when I saw that, my head just about exploded. I mean, the judgment that like provides on all levels of the parent, child, what message it tells the child when the parent isn't there.
And somebody at school is policing that lunchbox and saying, no, you can't eat that. Because that's a no food.
Yeah. I mean,
and the classism too of it, you know, you do not know what a parent is able to afford. I am absolutely floored and extremely angry hearing that. And my heart absolutely goes out to the parent and of course the child. I mean, how ostracizing and shaming and othering that was to that child.
Yeah, absolutely. So these messages were, I don't know if we're getting, you know, more fearful or if diet culture is just like rearing its ugly head, but you know, this message is in our children's lunch boxes. It's hitting preschoolers as they're using, you know, exercises to teach what good and bad foods are. How, you know, what do we as parents do about that? How should we approach our schools, or what advice can you give us to help fight back against some of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to take a step back and just really look at how big diet culture, how diet culture has affected so much, because it's not just the teacher who saw, you know, quote unquote bad food and put the note in the lunchbox. It's the school system. It's the in government. It's who is, you know, where the schools are getting lunches, where the tax dollars are going. It's the health insurance companies that are increasingly making people or making doctors do the BMI or they withhold money. So it is a top down system that can feel very difficult to fight. And I completely understand. But there are ways, you know, there are ways as a parent to, you know, like, I'm just gonna use this example. So if I had received that in a child's lunchbox, I think my first action would be to sit down with the child and let them know that there's nothing wrong with them, that this, the school shouldn't have done that, and that you are on their side, and that you are there to protect them, and you are not going to embarrass them, and just being there for them, being that safe person. You know, not screaming about the school while they're there, and just being a safe and calm person, letting them know that they're okay. I think that's the first thing, is really like child first. I think another thing that you can do is, you know, go to the school, speak with the principal, speak with the teacher, sit down, but have the education with you. And this is why I stress so much for parents to research diet culture, for parents to read books about it, to learn about it, so that you have the language when you go and talk to the school. You have the language, you have the statistics, you can say, look, this doesn't work, and this is why it doesn't work. Because unfortunately, if we just go and we yell at the school, say, how could you do that? We're not giving them the tools to make change. And it really is about, you know, changing the way we talk about food. You know, it's not good and bad. It's not clean and dirty. It's maybe it's processed and maybe some less processed. And it's always good to have fruits and vegetables. But at the end of the day, you know, getting kids calories is what they need.
Right.
And exactly. Get them fed. And, you know, really, it's even, you know, there's a lot of articles about how even our food pyramid is wrong because of lobbying. And so, you know, you have to question where they're even getting their information and why that food was bad to begin with. And, you know, let's say, for example, it was like a fruit roll up and they said, you know, this is a red food. You can say, look, at the end of the day, this has sugar and salt and fats and carbs, which my child needs for healthy brain cell function, healthy bone function, healthy lung function. And you really can't argue these things that, you know, at the end of the day, this is still giving my child the nutrients they need. It's not perfect because I'm not perfect and nobody's perfect. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had a conversation with a client and she said, you know, how do I wrap my head around this when there are bad foods? And I said to her, well, there aren't. There, you know, no food is inherently bad. And she said, well, there's soda and there's candy. And I said, they might not have the most nutritional value of all of the choices in the world, but it doesn't make them bad foods. A root beer float enjoyed over, you know, laughter and community and family bonding time is very healthy. Or a Reese's peanut butter cup, it has, you know, protein, it has fat, it has all the things that are actually not nutritionally void. That's all the things that we need. Yeah.
Right. And your body can use it regardless.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think another way to help frame it for people too is, you know, if we're talking about clean and dirty food, well, you know, if we take, let's say we're looking at a cucumber or an orange or an apple and we're like, this is good, you know, food, this is healthy food, this is not bad. If we look at the start to end process of growing that food, the amount of energy, the amount of waste that it took, the amount of oil it took to get to you, the amount of water it took to get you, the amount of land waste, and then the amount of, you know, are workers being paid fairly? The amount of, you know, do they get benefits? Do they get overtime? Are they getting health insurance? If we look at all of that, you will be hard pressed to find a perfectly clean food in your household unless you're growing it in your backyard. So, you know, we have to look really holistically at, yes, is processed food, is it not, you know, do we want to only be eating processed food all the time? No, of course not. But that's because there's a beautiful array of food all around us, but processed food can be really fun sometimes too. And taking that, you know, that shame out of it, but also going, look, if you want to apply this clean and dirty aspect to just processed food, you're going to have to apply it to all foods and really take a hard look at what you're calling clean and dirty.
Right. And that, I mean, it sounds like that taking a much wider lens to look at our food and our food system, and it kind of makes that clean and dirty thing, it's a moot point.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
and
it's all about context.
Yeah.
And you never, I really like that perspective. So, you know, then what would you tell a parent then who is, you know, who has maybe already started to use that language with children, and how can they, what steps can they take to start maybe repairing that language in their household of good and bad?
Right. Or maybe they've, teaching some of those, they've, restricted certain foods, mm-hmm. or things like that. You know, how can they go about kind of correcting those things?
And in the lens of body image and helping empower their children to feel, like there's some place to go from here.
Yeah. So, so I don't say clean, dirty, or good, bad. I was given great advice about a year ago from someone, and they said that they use the words, sometimes and always foods. And I thought that was really great. And it's the idea that, look, sometimes we can have chips and all this other stuff and processed foods and it's fine. And then there's all of these foods that are always foods. You can have them no matter what, whenever you're hungry. And we're not even setting up that you can only have sometimes foods on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, but it's just the idea that it's sometimes, they're occasional food when we want them, and we sit with our body and we say, yeah, that's what I want. That's when we eat them and we enjoy them. But I think parents really need to get back into remembering that their children started out as intuitive eaters. We all started out as intuitive eaters. We cried when we were hungry, and we pushed a breast away or the bottle away when we were full. And we all started that way. And then society messed us up. And we're very lucky that children are still young and their neural pathways haven't been so set that we can go back. We can help guide them back to intuitive eating. And so it's setting an example. It's eating with your kids. It's eating the foods your kids are eating with them. It's not having shame when you are eating a cookie. It's enjoying food with your family. And then it's also, getting rid of that clean, dirty, good, bad, and getting rid of that moral judgment of food. Just saying this is a sometimes food and this is an always food, or you find language that works for you. And to give you an idea, I had a parent that told me that she had a child who wouldn't eat broccoli, but would eat broccoli with Nutella on it, which sounds absolutely disgusting to me. But she was like, look, my kid's eating broccoli, so I'll dip it in Nutella. That's fine. And so look, you'll find things that work for your family. You'll find fun ways to get your kids to eat fruits and vegetables. And you gotta remember, like, I didn't like Brussels sprouts until 3 years ago. I didn't like anything other than, sauteed broccoli until I was like 25. So kids have a very small palate, and they are going to be okay, but they just need to eat.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, we probably all, I don't know if anybody else can remember, like, some weird food combinations.
Oh,
I think, yeah. I put ketchup on every single vegetable.
Just like a bowl of ketchup. I used to eat frozen fish sticks.
Yes, just frozen.
Just frozen. I think my parents said I used to eat them like popsicles.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
So disgusting. And it's so funny because I don't even eat fish. I think I fish is a food that I will not eat. Like, I've tried it over the years, but as a child, I loved eating frozen fish sticks.
That is so funny. And you know what? That those are the kinds of experiences around food, that those are the food rituals that are really important, because as silly or maybe, outrageous as they might be to us as adults in our context now, to have that fun, silly relationship with the food with your family is just another way to empower our children and to empower these powerful experiences around food. And that is so vital to this work.
Yes. Yeah. A great tip too is, having your kids help you cook. And even if it means just having them cut, a vegetable with a butter knife, getting them empowered in the kitchen, getting them to see the process of food from start to finish, but also, it becomes more enjoyable. I enjoy the things that I've made for myself. Even if I built myself a table that is the ugliest table in the world, it's like, it's mine, it's mine. Like, I made it. And you get a sense of pride and you get a sense of respect, and things are not so scary anymore. And it's so incredibly bonding. I mean, I just have so many memories of, making chocolate chip cookies with my mom, making pancakes with my dad. And so, Yeah, it's like, don't be afraid to let your kids get their hands dirty in the kitchen with you.
Yeah, and I'm sure it'll be maybe a bit messier than it might be over there, but those are fun memories too. Yeah, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, the earlier that you get them in there and you get them helping out, the sooner that they won't be making messes, you know, the sooner that they'll know how to chop vegetables, they'll know how to, you know, make rice, they'll know how to do all these things. And so it's messy in the beginning, but you're saving time later. Yeah,
exactly.
I love that because it's true. It's just a matter of time. The lesson needs to be learned at some point.
Right.
So yeah.
From the get-go.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you could recommend maybe some resources for parents that are concerned that, you know, their child might be kind of going down that road towards a troubled relationship with food, or especially a troubled relationship with their body. I feel like, you know, the food thing, you know, as a dietitian and an intuitive eating dietitian, I feel comfortable on the food side of things, but body image is something that, you know, is a bit harder to talk about maybe. Mm-hmm. Do you have any kind of favorite resources or advice to kind of help parents?
Yeah. I mean, I have on my website, if you go to danasukow.com/resources, I have a free resource page that has articles, it has online eating disorder support information for parents, it has documentaries about body image, podcasts, Instagram accounts to follow, and then body positive books for kids 12 and under, kids 12 to 17, and then 18 and up. And it's all free. You don't need to subscribe to any email list to get it. You literally just go to my website, click on it, and there's a bunch of free information. And so I like sharing that with people because I think, you know, people don't know where to start. And so there's some great books that I list for parents that I think are really great, you know, intros to this stuff. And, you know, and then also, you know, if you're reading a book, having your kid read a body positive book, you know, together is, you know, learning about this stuff together is really important because it also is showing your child that, look, you don't know all the answers, and it's showing them that it's okay to not know everything and that you guys can learn this together and it can be a beautiful bonding experience.
You know, I think that's one of the best pieces of advice is that you don't always know everything and it's okay to learn. And it's okay to tell our children that we have learned.
And that we're not perfect.
Yes. And to bring them on the journey with us. And that is absolutely what can happen in, you know, this kind of work with you know, body image and with food and food confidence. Yeah. We can all learn together. And we can all grow together. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I mean, thinking back, I wish I heard my parents say, look, you know, if they had got down on my level, if they got down on a knee and they said, look, I'm trying my best. I don't know the answers to everything. I'm really trying my best, but I'm going to make mistakes and I'm sorry. And I think that would have felt not only safe, but I think that would have helped me as an adult. I think it would have helped me grow into a person that isn't so scared to make mistakes and that knows that nobody knows everything, you know, and I think that parents are very afraid to not be the strong, all-knowing person that they think their children want. But, you know, children don't need you to be perfect because no one is perfect. So you're not going to be perfect. You know, children need honesty and vulnerability and love, and they need to know that it's okay to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. Yeah. So before we want to let you go, we want to be respectful of time. So one last question that we have for you is, what is one piece of advice that you wish you could give every single parent and caregiver to help children foster healthier body images?
I mean, you know, one piece, there's so many things I wish I could share. I think my most important one is, start working on healing yourself. Start working on healing the relationship that you yourself have with food and that you yourself have with your own body, because the energy that you are putting into the world in relation to food and your body, children are seeing it and children are picking up on it, and other people see it. And if you can heal and start to heal what's going on inside of you, I like to say, like, It's almost like you're healing your inner child. And if you can begin to heal your inner child, you can focus on healing and protecting your current child. Mm.
That's yeah, I love that piece of advice. Mm-hmm. And you've shared so much, so many gems with us.
Yeah,
so much. This has been such a great conversation. And we would love, you know, before we sign off, just to kind of let, if you could let us know maybe what does the future hold for your work, and also where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, so most of the work I do is on Instagram, but literally you can, if you just search Dana Suchow, DanaSuchow, it's danasuchow.com, it's Instagram/DanaSuchow, Facebook/DanaSuchow, it's just my name anywhere. If you want to email me, it's Dana@DanaSuchow.com, so I feel like I'm pretty easy to find. And then, you know, the future, I want to keep working and doing training with parents. I really like working one-on-one with them and seeing just the growth in, you know, just a month of doing training with people. And then I want to do more speaking with schools. I want to do more speaking with parents. You know, I want to keep going out and traveling and working with anybody who is in the place that they can receive and work on this message.
That's so wonderful. Well, we're so excited to see how all of that continues to flourish for you. And we're so appreciative of all the work that you do and of your time today. Yes. And speaking with us.
Thank
today.
You so much. I had such a great time talking with you too. Thank you again. And thanks for creating a space like this. We need more people talking about this stuff. So thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right. We'll talk soon. We'll see you online.
You've been listening to the Food Confidence Podcast. I'm Jennifer Bravo.
And I'm Andrea Paul.
If you have any questions about the things you heard in today's episode or have topics you'd like us to discuss in the future, send us an email at foodconfidencepod@gmail.com or follow us and message us on Instagram @foodconfidencepod.